Happy MLB opening day 2020, everybody. Graham here with a few notes before we get today's show started. First off, MLB announced after we recorded the episode that there's going to be a new playoff format, 8 teams in each league to comprise a 16-team playoff field. We did not know about this, so you're not going to hear anything about that. And a couple of things you will hear is us talking about, like, oh, you know, will the Braves be able to get a wild card, or who's going to be the wild card? So forget about that shit, because MLB decided to, of course, not consult us before our episode, which is ridiculous, so that's going to be inaccurate. We also are recording outside again due to wanting to be in the same place, but also not wanting to get too close during these COVID times. So you're going to hear a little bit of traffic in this new location we picked out. We'll try to find a better place to do it next time, but there's going to be a little traffic periodically throughout the episode. And to wrap up these sort of pre-show notes, we have some actual good news that happened. Amber Goes Violining on Twitter, who is huge in the Braves community for her excellent Braves parody songs utilizing her violin, guitar, and excellent singing voice, was gracious enough to allow us to use her newest creation at the end of our episode to close out the show. So we're really excited to be able to share that with you all on our show. And if you want to check out any of the other the dozens of fantastic parody songs that she has created since last year, look her up on Twitter. She's at Amber Goes Violin, and her work is fantastic. And we want to say again to her, to Amber, thank you so much for letting us use the song for the episode. We hope you guys enjoy the show today. Go Braves. What's up, Atlanta sports fans? I'm Graham Waldrop, and alongside me, as always, is Adam Kalau, and we're Atlanta's own. Two Atlanta natives recapping the week that was in Atlanta professional sports, wacky ass hijinks, and analysis. Adam, how's it going, sir?
Graham, I'm doing pretty damn well. You know?
Sure.
Strong start to the show.
That is. I'm doing pretty damn well.
Well, I was going to go multiple directions with it, but, you know, we're doing an early afternoon podcast for us. It's 4 p.m.
Right.
On what's today? Wednesday?
Wednesday, July 23rd? 22nd, excuse me.
And the nice thing about our podcast contracts that we have, you're obligated to have a drinky-poo while you do a podcast.
Right.
So a little early afternoon beer I'm enjoying right here from New Realm Brewing Company. You got to support local during these times, Graham.
Sure.
So supporting this local brewery, and I watched two Atlanta sports last night, Graham. So at the same time, the flip back and forth.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
So, how'd that feel, going from like no sports to multiple sports on at once that you actually have an interest in?
It was awesome. Like we've kind of fallen into this just like Netflix routine at night. And, I find if you put sports on, it's just a lot more, you do a lot more talking in the household.
Because you don't have to pay attention as
exactly.
much, right?
Yeah, it was kind of a nice change of pace.
Yeah.
I don't know if Veronica was stoked about it. I believe her quote was that she's not ready for sports. But I'm happy about it, Graham.
I mean, I'm surprised you weren't quieter, though, hanging on the sultry tones of Chip Carey making joke after joke about the fake crowd noise and having such witty insight about how things are just going to be a little strange this year over and over again. How could you not want to hear that, Adam? How could you be talking over the great Chip Carey?
You know,
the man comes from royalty.
He's probably not in midseason form either.
I don't think anyone is at this point.
Yeah, you got to cut him some slack. And
I can't.
I did when I was listening to the radio yesterday when I called you saying flip it on. Mm-hmm. I thought you would have immediately freaked out about how they were on the radio, Joe Simpson and I guess Jim Powell with Joe Simpson nowadays. They're just commenting on how they were so concerned because the Braves didn't have enough lefties in their lineups, as if that's the end-all be-all.
Oh, Jesus.
So they were happy about the Matt Adams signing.
Well, that's just going to solve all our fucking problems.
So maybe the announcers are in mid-season form. It's just, you know, the classic sticking to the same storylines they've been talking about for the last 15 years.
Right. I mean, you gotta have a lefty in your lineup. On base percentage doesn't matter, and if you have a high batting average but a
ridiculously high batting average of balls in play. You're the best third baseman in the history of the Atlanta Braves, like Chris Johnson was.
Chris Johnson, yes. Yeah. Yes.
Let's ignore actual data and just go with our guts at all times.
I'm a gut man myself.
I know you are, but you can also acknowledge when you can let data come into your life a little bit.
Yeah,
I would think.
You mean like batting average, home runs, RBIs?
Maybe a little beyond that. Like, remember we were talking about in last, I guess not last week's, but Monday's show or whenever that was, about Nick Markakis and how you wouldn't miss his 0.5 WAR per year.
Oh yeah, I do like WAR.
Yeah.
WAR's a good stat.
So there you go. You let it in a little bit.
Yeah. I opened up the door.
Right.
Yeah.
Cracked it open just a hair, just to let something come through. Yeah. Not everything, but something.
Yeah. But Diagram's big week. Opening day, technically tomorrow.
Yes. Dodgers play somebody.
Or probably last week by the time this podcast is out.
No, we'll be getting this out on Friday.
Okay.
That's the goal.
Nice.
Unless something comes up.
Yeah.
I'm very busy these days, Adam.
Right. A lot of disc golf to be played.
Yeah, a lot of disc golf to be played.
But yeah, Graham. Where you at, Bo?
I'm doing good. I watched a decent amount of the game last night. Didn't watch the whole thing. It was weird. I actually listened to Chip Carey and Tom Glavine, which, as most folks know, I mute almost every time they're on. Just because I can't stand Chip. But it was odd with no fans in the stands. Now I feel like I'm sounding like Chip Carey. But at the end of the day, it was good to see, you know, baseball happen. But it was an odd experience without any fans and this piped-in noise. But other than that, it wasn't really that. I mean, like, I got used to it after about 10 minutes. I didn't feel the need to keep bringing it up over and over again to Alexa or anybody or pets in the house. And be like, oh, man, can you believe there's no people on the goddamn stage? How weird is this? So, you know, you get adjusted to that. And just I got to the point where it's just like, oh, I'm just watching the game.
I know. I thought watching it on TV felt fairly normal.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's a lot stranger for the players, but I've heard them say that, you know, they're getting used to it at this point. It is what it is. It was kind of depressing. Well, not depressing, but I almost felt bad for Matt Adams. Hits the walk-off home run as just walking around.
That was funny.
It was very surreal.
Yeah, he sort of got a couple of fist punches and a couple of high fives. Don Mattingly and Snicker before the game touched elbows instead of shaking hands.
Yeah.
Everybody's wearing a mask.
So they're trying.
Yeah.
We'll see. I'm sure there's going to be a lot more high fives as the season progresses.
Well, I'm just wondering about Freddie Freeman, you know, not being able to give anybody a hug. It's going to just, you know. But I think after his COVID scare, he's perfectly willing not to do that. Because it came out, I think this happened after we recorded the show last time, but, you know, he was talking about how his fever got to 104 at one point. He was afraid to go to sleep. He thought he was going to die. He was freaking out. You know, maybe he was overreacting a little bit, but I mean, in that moment, you got a fever that high, some scary shit. So, we're really glad that he, you know, made his recovery just personally for him, even over baseball. I mean, sounds like he was one of the young folks who had this thing pretty bad and was kicking his ass to a point where it was getting dangerous. But he's back. I can't believe he's back on time to start the season.
Yeah, after our last episode, you thought he was going to be out for, like, months.
Well, I just thought he was going to miss at least 5 or 10 games. I mean, you think about Will Smith, for example, who was signed in the offseason to hopefully be the closer, at least setup man back in the bullpen. One of the better relievers in baseball from the Giants. He was one of the other four that tested positive, and he hasn't. He's asymptomatic at this point, but he hasn't tested negative yet. You have to go through two negative tests. So Freddie, since he got sick and had that huge fever, has tested negative twice, and now he's back, but Will Smith hasn't. So you just don't know. You just don't know how people's bodies are going to react to that shit.
Yeah. Hopefully I'm assuming he's staying in shape since he's...
He looked great.
Feeling fine.
He looked great last night.
I was talking about Will Smith.
Oh, Will Smith, yeah. I hope he's throwing, and I'm sure he's taking care of himself, you know. He's one of the better relievers in baseball for a reason. So I would think that if he's, you know, physically able to do things and toss and whatnot, he's going to be doing that, even if he can't do it with anybody else.
Yeah, no, Freddie's on. Like I said last week, he's one of those guys who can roll out of bed hit line drives, gappers.
Yeah, opposite field.
Fred will be ready to go.
Yeah, now that he's back, it was really nice when just seeing him, I think the Braves posted on silly social media, just Freddie walking out of the clubhouse into the dugout and then onto the field, and he just goes, oh, this is nice. And then the video just ends.
He said, this is wonderful.
Oh, this is wonderful,
Which is even more Freddie Freeman.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he said that he kind of realized, I guess baseball had become more like a job. He had realized, and just like being away from it for this long, he realized how much he loves just playing the game.
Yeah, and I think also just being, you know, feeling like, well, Jesus, I don't know if, who knows what, if I'll wake up tomorrow, then just being like, oh man, I can fucking play again. Yeah. I mean, that's got to be a huge thing where you're not taking anything for granted at this point. Not that he was, but even more so now coming back from that. So,
do you think your boy Nick Markakis, you think he has any regrets with his decision now? Because I feel like when he opted out, it seemed a little early in the, like, process for bringing baseball back. Like, I know part of his reasoning was not playing around fans.
Yeah.
I wonder if he thinks he jumped the gun there at all now, seeing how it's all going down.
I mean, he's the only person that can say, but I think that, I don't know. I think knowing, not that I know Markakis, but, you know, being a pretty resolute guy in his opinions, I think he's probably just sticking with it and probably doesn't have a regret.
Well, it's going to be tough for him to, like, watch his team that he could have been a part of this year.
Oh, yeah, I think it's going to suck, but I think the health issues outweigh him playing, and also, I don't know how much I'm putting into the fans not being there as a reason not to play. I think it's more of the health things. That's just my opinion on with him, but what the hell do I know? I'm sure there has to be some tinge of regret there.
Yeah.
Especially after seeing the game last night, also seeing Freddie out there. Because that was one of the big things he said, is like hearing Freddie sound so fucked up made him not want to play. It scared him. And that's totally fair.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. There's probably a twinge of regret there, but I think at the end of the day, he's probably okay with the decision.
So where we stood last week on the podcast, I guess we kind of need to fill people in on what's actually happened. Where last week we were squawking about Yasiel Puig.
Well, I obviously haven't heard the episode that was released. I put a disclaimer at the beginning saying,
oh,
we fucked up on Puig. Freddie Freeman is back.
Oh.
There's some things that you're going to hear that might not be totally accurate because of that.
Got it.
But
So the people are informed.
Okay. We had a little Yasiel Puig talk, but we didn't. I cut out a good amount of of the stuff. I'd be like, well, is it going to be a bad clubhouse project? I don't know. All that bullshit.
Oh, so we just wasted our time. Okay.
Yeah, so we're good. We can continue.
Okay. Where were we? So instead of Yasiel Puig replacing Nick Markakis, Big City's background.
That is Matt Adams for the uninitiated.
Which is pretty exciting. If for those of you who don't remember, Graham shrugged and scoffed a little bit. Matt Adams, we traded for him in 2017 after Freddie Freeman broke his wrist after about 30 games in that season. And he came in and hit something like 14 homers in his first 30 games.
This was in 2017. Let's keep that in mind.
Yeah.
It's been a while since then.
Right. But they loved him in the clubhouse. Obviously, that was enough. That's when Freddie moved to third base to keep his bat in the lineup. And he's been a bear to play against the last few years. That alone. Like, when he was with the Nationals.
I mean, it's not like, I mean, he did hit 20 home runs last year.
Yeah, the guy's a DH. That's the problem. He's never really had...
He's not like he's a very one-dimensional player. He's very much, you know, if you're a right-handed pitcher, he's got a good chance of taking a yard. He averages, I think, every 14.3 at-bats against a right-hander. He's hitting a home run. So he's got immense power.
Which is awesome.
You know, that's also in limited appearances. He's only had 310 at-bats last year. I'm not going to... here's the thing. The season is so unprecedented that it's hard to... I don't know. It's hard to have normal analysis about it because, think about it, also, rosters are going to be 30 people to start the season.
Yeah.
So, you have the universal DH, you got a whole bunch of other, you know, you only got 60 games. So it's like, I feel like having the normal analysis of a player like Matt Adams, who you know can get hot for short periods of time, is kind of silly to say, oh, well, I don't know how he's going to perform throughout the whole season, for Christ's sake, because you look at the stats and it doesn't really line up that he's going to be a great contributor. But who knows? Matt Adams could hit 19 home runs this year in 60 games.
Sure
could. And could be a huge part of the middle of the lineup. He could also be awful. We just don't know what we're going to get. But I think his track record is at least established enough to the point where he's going to slaughter, he's going to hit some home runs against right-handed pitching. And it'll be a nice depth piece for the Braves this year, I think.
I feel like you're underestimating what his role is going to be. Like, I think he's going to be slotted in as the DH the majority of the games. Because Osuna's going to, Snitker said last night, we signed Osuna to play left.
Yeah.
So.
And he actually had a couple of nice plays in left field last night. That's why I said last week, everybody is so fixated on that one play when he was with the Cardinals where he leapt onto the fence to catch a ball and it bounced like 20 feet in front of him. He misplayed one ball. Everybody freaks out. He's not a defensive wizard, but he's also not horrendous in the outfield.
I think you're right there. Yeah. So, but Snitker saying that, and then also just insinuating how happy he was to see Matt Adams walk back into the clubhouse. He's going to be a DH, Bo.
You think he's going to be... Well, I would say against right-handed pitching, he'll be your DH. I don't think... He doesn't hit left-handers well at all, so I don't think he's your full-time DH. But the good news is that about 90% of the pitchers we're going to face this year, from a starting pitching perspective at least, are right-handed. So that plays into his favor.
I'm not sure if they're facing... The exhibition game is going on today. I'm not sure if they're facing a lefty or a righty today with the Marlins, but the lineup that they slotted out today, I think is going to be a very common lineup where we've got Osuna in left, and one of my favorite lineups, Osuna in left, Acuna in center, my boy Duvall in right, and then Matt Adams DHing.
So what makes you think that if Ender Inciarte is healthy that Brian Snitker will give up his man crush on him and bench him?
I just think Ender's bat is just so...
But Snitker never realizes that.
I think he does. Like, he had relegated him...
He's hitting sixth, for Christ's
sake. He's relegated him to be the fourth outfielder, like, the past 2 years, but we just needed him as parts because of injuries.
But there were times, like, last year he was, like, opening day, if you look back at the lineup.
Well,
he was still hitting leadoff.
That was different.
I mean, I know Snitker has said, I'm a dumbass. I'm paraphrasing here, but he did literally say that he was... I think he did say he was a dumbass, but basically that he was wrong for ever trying to move Acuna to four. So Acuna's going to be your leadoff guy no matter what. Ozzie's going to be your second guy, I think, no matter what. I just don't like Ender's bat anymore at this point in his career. He doesn't walk. He's not very fast. The only thing he's good for is defense, to me. He's terrible against left-handed pitching, and he makes weak contact. So, I mean, but Snitker... loves his ass. And at this point, I would rather have Duvall. I would rather have Ozuna, Acuna, Duvall as your outfield over putting Ender, giving Ender a bunch of starts. I just think you don't have a lot of time to fuck around here.
No, you need as much pop in the lineup as you can get.
Yeah, and that doesn't kill you defensively. And the weakest link you have is Ozuna and left. But we know that Ozuna has saved... over 7 runs from last year. So,
and you'll be able to shade Acuna his way with Duvall and right, being able to cover a lot more ground.
Right. I'm not saying Ender never plays. I'm just saying he should not be your primary starter and should only be used as a defensive guy as much as possible.
I guess the main point is we'll have to see what Snit does. Obviously, we could sit here and talk lineups all day.
Right. I'm sure he's gone through it a bunch. And also... I'm sure he has a bunch of contingency plans in case any COVID bullshit comes up. I mean, I think that's another reason why you sign Matt Adams, is because the guy might have to get out there and play. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, from the looks of it, it looks like Matt Adams and your boy Yonder Alonso,
right,
who's basically the same player but
right,
not as good,
yeah,
are going to make the lineup. And it's just because you need to have as much flexibility as you can.
And
really going.
I think when you have extra roster spots like you do this year, that isn't a bad thing at all. Who doesn't want an extra power bat off the bench? You get Alonso and Adams, fine, so be it. Also, depth at first base in case, I don't know, if something comes up with Freddie again. If he gets sick, not even necessarily COVID, but just like after effects of it. Who the fuck knows? I mean, you've got to have as many backup plans as possible during this bizarre, bizarre season. So, I do like that Anthopoulos, even though the Puig signing fell through, has been aggressive in trying to add more to the roster, particularly after Markakis opted out, after Felix Hernandez opts out. I don't like that we signed Joelis Chacin because he's incredibly inconsistent and had over a 6+ ERA last year and couldn't stay healthy. In like 24 starts, he had a 6 ERA and an awful 1.56 whip.
Very good the three previous years, though.
He's okay. He's been up and down pretty much since the Braves let him go. He's had good stints where he's got his ERA in the mid-3s, and he has stints where it's in the high 4s. Last year was his worst year of his career, certainly. And, I mean, when he started on the Rockies, I mean, there's a couple years he was worth 5 WAR. I mean, he was a good pitcher. I just don't know where he's at this point.
Well, let's hope. I mean, here's where we're at. We're down in the starting pitching. If you don't mind me getting into the starting pitching.
Please.
We're kind of bebopping around.
I think it's fine. It's an unorthodox season, unorthodox preview show.
Okay, perfect. So, we're already down 2 starting pitchers.
Right.
From where we were in spring training. Felix Hernandez and Cole Hamels. I don't know where Cole Hamels is. Let's not even discuss him until...
I'm going to act like he's not pitching this year until he does.
Until there's some real news on him. So we're down 2 already.
So let's talk about go over the rotation. Or, sorry, you're trying to make a point.
Okay. Yeah, we'll go from the top. Obviously, we're feeling solid 1 and 2. Soroka free.
Right.
Feel pretty good there. Now, Sean Newcomb goes from being a guy, is he in the bullpen? Is he your starter? He's your number 3 starter now.
Right.
And then number 4, and I want to stick to number 4 for a second, talk about Fulton.
Okay.
I've got a hot take on Fulton.
I know we were texting last night, and you were very, you're sounding like me.
I think
this, very absolutist attitude.
I don't think Fulton is on this roster after this season.
Wow. So what, do you think he's just DFA'd?
Trade him for any sack potatoes he can get. This guy is the opposite of Mike Soroka. All the talent of the world, worst head game I've ever seen in my life. Like, the exhibition game last night, I realize it's just an exhibition game, but he got shelled, gave up back-to-back-to-back homers against the Marlins. His fastball was topping out between 88 and 91. And I'm not saying anything. Expecting you to interject.
I'm not saying anything. You're on a roll. I'm not saying anything.
Fastball between 88 and 91 miles an hour, to the point where Snicker's going out there to check on him, make sure he's not hurt. He says he's fine. So he does his classic, like, 4+ innings, gave up, I think, 6 earned runs. And then the worst part was his post-game interview. This guy pulls out every excuse in the book. He blamed the radar gun. He says his fastball's fine. I know what's coming on the board isn't accurate. It feels fine. Where you've got an opposing pitcher, Jose Urania, throwing 96 on the same radar gun. So he brings that up. He's blaming the conditions, the wet conditions. Keep in mind, Urania's pitching in the same conditions, pitched 3 scoreless innings. Said there's no rosin bag. Like, this guy sounds like a 13-year-old child. And then once I told Graham, I saw him, there was a comebacker to him that bounced off of his glove and ended up being like an infield hit. And his body language, that same faulty body language that we're all used to seeing. Like, the guy has zero mental toughness. And one inning looks like the best pitcher in the league. The next inning looks like Paul Mahomes. So...
As it might even be discrediting Paul Mahomes.
Yeah, Paul Mahomes was a solid, I don't even know, some big prospect. Lucas Sims.
There you go.
I wanted to compare him, actually, like, with the 88 to 91, it's like, is this Matt Whistler we're looking at again? Is this 2016?
Matt Whistler. Oh, man.
We're watching Matt Whistler out there?
Yeah.
This guy is the Pity Martinez of baseball right now. Like, all the talent of the world, just can't get his head on straight. And at this point, I mean, he debuted in, like, I think 2014. Like, he's been an all-star. And this could be the biggest overreaction in the world. but he also threw the worst inning for us in the history of our franchise. And I just don't think he'd come back from that. So, needless to say, Fulte's a massive question mark for me. And that's why you got to bring in a guy like Chassid that might need to throw innings for us.
Okay.
Because so, at five, we got Kyle Wright, which is also a question mark.
Right.
But we'll see.
So, I agree with some of your points. I think his reaction, I agree, was particularly petulant last night when he was interviewed about his post-game performance. Everything you said, I agree with there. Like, it would be, you know, he did say he was just working on things, which I get, but it would be nice not to blame all these things. And also the rosin bag thing, the reason that there's no rosin bag out there is because pitchers are allowed to bring their own rosin bag due to COVID issues.
Oh, yeah?
So if you want to bring a rosin bag out there, you can. So if you're making an excuse about that, you can go fuck yourself for one not being out there because you didn't bring one.
What, you got to go to Sports Authority and buy a rosin bag?
I guess. Or I'm sure, you know, you could say, hey.
Amazon, now?
No, I'm sure they could go to anyone within the team and say, hey, I'd like to order my own rosin bag. Can we do that? And they would do that for him.
Sure.
You know, so him not doing that and blaming, you know, basically saying that, you know, it's bullshit I don't have a rosin bag is horse shit on his end because he can go get his own and have it out there.
Yep.
So I think everything about what you said with the post game, I am totally on board with. Fulte's performance, as we know, has been wildly inconsistent through his career. He can look excellent, he can look like shit. Second half of last year, even though he did have that awful game in game 5 against the Cardinals, I mean, but game 2 he was lights out. He pitched his ass off, and also and that second half of that year, after he had his mental breakdown and got sent down the minor leagues, he was probably our best pitcher down the stretch. So I think there's still enough there that we don't give up on Fulte, or we say he's a loser head kid, which I don't know. I just don't want to give up on him because I know what he can do, and he did it as recently as last postseason. Although we saw the Jekyll Hyde a little bit in the last postseason. But if you look at the sample size of the second half of last year, which was, you know, 2-3 months, he was excellent. He was outstanding. So I don't think we're in a position right now, based off of that one game, to say, fuck Fulte. I have no faith in him. I think it's okay to question him. I think it's okay to wonder, what is he going to do for me this year? Because I don't think it's set in stone what the hell he's going to do. He's vitriolic. He's very unpredictable. But I also know what he can do, especially over a shortened period of time, like a 60-game season. And he could wind up being an excellent pitcher for us. He could also shit the bed. We just don't know. But I don't think now, after last night, even though it was rough, is the time to, you know, jump out of a window when it comes to Fulton age.
No, I mean, I can deal with, like I said, if he had just said, yeah, I'm working on some stuff, blahzy, blahzy, blah. But the excuses, that's,
yeah,
that's
bad. I agree with you.
That's very, very troublesome.
I have no defense for that. Because if he reacts like that during an exhibition game, how's he going to react when, you know, during a regular season game?
I mean, he's 28, 29 years old.
Yeah.
Like, that, it should be in his prime.
Right.
And then you got, like, a 22-year-old kid in Soroka that's just the complete opposite of that. Like,
yeah, he is so locked in. You never know. If you were to take away the scoreboard on the television or in the stadium if you're there, pre-COVID bullshit, you wouldn't, and you were to look at Soroka, and you would not know if he was up 10-0 or down 10-0, because he is 100% consistent in his emotional maturity. And I thought, you know, that Fulte had gotten kind of over that last year, especially after he came back in the second half, you know, looked like a totally different guy. But I mean, as a wise man once said, you can always come back, but you can't come back all the way. I think that's always going to be there with Fulte a little bit.
Yep.
If not a lot, you know. So we'll see what happens there. What did you think about the back-to-back-to-back home runs that happened with Fulte?
I actually didn't see them.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
No.
So it was like,
I know it was on 4 pitches.
Yeah. The third one wasn't actually a bad pitch. But one thing I noticed about Fulte last night in general, and this wasn't just the home runs, but he was getting the ball up a lot more than he usually does when he pitches well. I think that's why he was getting tagged a little bit. He also got unlucky with a couple of bloop hits last night, but Yeah, I mean, this performance, even though he had a couple of moments of, like, oh, okay, that was a solid inning, regardless if he was working on things, like, I think it's kind of scary to hear him say he's working on things, even though I know this is weird, and now we're in, like, summer training or whatever it's called. I know that's odd, but it's like, I mean, your first start, if you're Folty, is on Monday.
Against
the time,
a great team.
Against Tampa Bay, who is scrappy as hell and will put runs on the board. If you think the Marlins, you give up six runs to the Marlins, you give up back-to-back-to-back home runs against the Marlins, they're gonna fuck you up, the Tampa Bay is, if you pitch like that. So the time to work on stuff, to me, is not now. The time to pitch, even though I know this is like his first game against another team, I mean, like, I'm at a point now, at least mentally, if I'm out there, and like, I gotta practice like I play at this point, because there's not a lot of time to work on things.
No.
By working, you're going to work on things by performing. If you perform like that, and a game, your first real game is right around the corner, that's scary. But if you perform like that and it's your second start of spring training, who gives a shit? Because you are working on things. But now's not the time to have that attitude, I don't think. So I think his mindset going into it wasn't good either.
And I think that's why we keep seeing Josh Tomlin so much. It's like, you're going to have a short leash on him. If Folty has, theoretically, what, 12 starts this year?
Yeah.
And half of them are garbage? That's like a third of the games that you can lose.
Yeah, you can't afford that.
And not make the playoffs. So, I mean, Josh Tomlin, like, as soon as you see Folty going off the rails, throw in the veteran.
Or Chasen,
yeah. No. So, I mean, that's why I like having, I understand they are what they are, but they're also, they've been pitching in the major leagues for probably 8 to 10 years each for a reason.
Yeah, I'd take Tomlin over Chasen. I mean, Tomlin had a really sneaky, solid, good year last year. I know there were times he got shellacked, but it felt like, more often than not, I mean, I think back to that eighth inning against St. Louis in the game four, where it was just 1-2-3. I mean, he, like,
I believe
pitched perfectly.
I was screaming to keep Tomlin in the game.
Yes.
Like, I think we win the World Series last
year. Oh, Jesus.
If
Tomlin pitches the next inning.
If you keep Josh Tomlin in
the game. Who knows? But I'm just saying, like, especially down the stretch, he was very consistent. So, like, if you got to throw someone out there, if Wright, Folt, or Folty, or Newcomb don't do well for, more than three or four starts, Tomlin's the first guy I'm going to. If Hamels isn't healthy, obviously. But,
yeah.
I mean, I think there's a lot of questions for this Braves team right now. And I know last week I was more concerned about the pitching staff, or excuse me, the offense than I was the pitching staff. But I think at least with the offense, your top three guys are as solid as they come. Excellent players. After that, it's a bit of, we do have a bit of mystery there. Ozuna hopefully will be solid, but it's really after Ozuna where it starts to get murky. Is Darnot the guy from the second half of last year who hit 16 home runs, or is he the bum who was hitting like 220 in the first half of 2019? Who is Dansby? Who is Austin Riley? Who is Camargo? There's a bunch of question marks there, but you at least feel good that four out of your nine guys are going to be pretty damn solid in there, if not excellent. So, but with the pitching staff, the starting rotation, you only feel good about two of your five guys. And another thing about that is, and I hate to use the youth thing as an issue, but they're also young guys, and they're going to be expected to carry the rotation. And not to say that we haven't had young guys carry the rotation last year. Certainly, Soroka knows how to do that. But you don't have anyone to really fall back on at this point. If those guys aren't on for whatever reason, your season's fucked.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many, like, Sean Newcomb could go either way, Folty could go either way, Kyle Wright could go either way.
But even
Tukey could go either way.
Yeah, even Fried and Soroka to a degree, because they're so young.
I think we've seen enough of them, though, to
right.
know what they're made of.
I especially feel that way about Soroka. I love Fried, too. But I'm just saying, it's like you don't have that veteran stability
yeah,
down
why
there
you want
at all.
Cole Hamels.
Right. And then he could have provided that. Hopefully he can provide that at some point, but we'll see.
Yeah.
But you're putting a lot of pressure on the shoulders of your young staff
yeah.
right now.
Or the bullpen. Like, maybe they just need to ride that bullpen a lot more. So
yeah, potentially. Especially with Will Smith not being there. You still feel pretty good about the bullpen, though, I think, with Melanson.
I've read some good things about
Chris Martin.
AJ Minter, believe it or not.
Minter has supposedly got his shit together.
Which
he's got his huge. He's got his cutter back. He's also a left-handed pitcher, which we didn't have a ton of last year in the bullpen, which would be nice to have a shutdown guy. So if he can get his shit back and flash anything of when he was, I wouldn't say dominant in 2018, but good, you know. I don't think, if he did appear in a game last year, I do not remember.
Oh, he did. He was garbage.
Yeah, I think I just blocked that out of my memory. Because he was one of the main reasons that we got, you know, we went on that huge bullpen shopping spree in the trade deadline with Green,
Martin
Melanson, and Chris Martin.
So, man, that's pretty awesome. We're bringing all those guys back, plus Will Smith.
Yeah, hopefully Will Smith is back soon. I think if Will Smith is there, you feel pretty damn good about those four guys.
Okay. Then you got your, you do have your Tomlin, Chasin's out there. This guy who pitched last night, the lefty, is it Rison?
It's Russin, Chris Russin.
Yeah, I mean, he looked really good. Big lefty, throws 95 to 98. And he was a number one overall pick for the Rockies back in, like, 2015.
Well, we know how good they are at developing their young pitching.
He got the yips.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. It's just, like, I don't blame him entirely. Because they've never been known to... One, they had the ballpark working against them, and two, they haven't really developed a ton of great, great pitchers out of there.
So he's kind of... He's a big comeback story guy. So I just... It's guys like him, Tucker Davidson. Rookies looked really good out of the bullpen as well. So it's like... I feel like even the back end of the bullpen has all these arms with really great potential versus in years past where we're relying on the corpse of Eric O'Flaherty and Peter Moylan.
Right. Yeah. Heroes of a bygone era.
Or Chad Sabatka. I don't think Chad Sabatka makes the opening day roster, but it's like the bullpen is, you feel good out there.
Yeah, I think
which
overall,
in a season like this could be huge.
Yeah, I think you got to have a good bullpen this year, particularly with a staff where you don't know what you're going to get. I think it's a good mix of veterans. I think the guys you're going to rely on more are going to be the veterans. But I think, you know, one of those guys that you're talking about, Russ and Davidson, one of those guys could, I don't know much about them, to be honest, but in a season as odd as this, who the hell knows? Maybe they step up and they're fucking heroes.
Yeah.
You never know.
Yeah. So... We just need to hope that four out of those five starters hit, and then maybe you can fill in the fifth with a Chasin, a Tomlin, a Tukey. We'll see.
Yeah. I don't view this right now. I'm not overly confident about going to the playoffs right now. And it's not because of – it's not just the personnel. It's just the oddity of the season. I think there's going to be some fluke playoff teams going in here. I mean, I could easily see the Mets. I think the Mets, Nationals, Phillies, or the Braves could represent the NL East.
Yeah, that's the tough part about the NL East is we're going to bang up on each other.
Like, all the time.
Yeah, and so it will be tough to get a wild card.
Yeah.
You're entitled to your opinion. A lot of the so-called experts do have the Braves going far.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. I mean, I think there's a lot to like about the... I mean, you got Acuna, Freddie Freeman, Soroka, Freed, Albies. And then you got your bullpen. And you got to feel pretty good about that. It's just like, there are a lot of question marks I have about the lineup. Like I said, you know, who are all of these guys that are in the bottom half of the lineup after Ozuna? I have no fucking idea what they're going to do. The only guys I feel confident about really are the top three. And to Ozuna to a lesser extent. I just don't know. I just have no freaking idea.
Yeah.
So, because there's so many question marks, it's hard for me to get, you know, and you know, to stand up and say, oh, man. And it's not just them. It's also just the hangover of the last 20 years of Braves baseball where you can't win a playoff series. You know, you've gone to the postseason. Let's count it off. You've gone to the postseason 9 times since 2001, and you can't get past the division series. Or the wild card, if you go to the wild card. I mean, it's just like, that will linger over my head until that streak is broken. And I cannot, absolutely cannot, have any confidence that we're going to get past it until we do. You have to, it's very much, I am Missouri right now. I am the show me state. Show me that you can do it. I will believe in you if you show me. Because I believe so many times and been crushed beyond what I can count to the point where I can't hope. I am there, I am loyal, but I cannot hope anymore. I'm beyond a hopeful person when it comes to the Braves' performance in the postseason.
I'm so happy to see you being depressed and apathetic about sports again.
As opposed to real life.
Yes.
Well, the best part is now we got best of both worlds. I can be that way about real life, and I can also be that way about the Braves again, which will make my real life better.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I have somewhere else to channel that negative energy.
Yeah, I could counteract you on your last statement, but I'm just going to let you have that one just because it felt great to hear, Graham.
It's a classic Graham rant about the failures of Atlanta sports.
Exactly. You know, inability to see all the positive things we have going for us potentially, and focusing on the negatives. That's the Graham Waldrop I know.
Yep. Well, when you're conditioned and beaten down for 30 years as a sports fan, that's sort of you are what you eat, I guess.
Yeah. So do you want to do a prediction for wins?
Yeah, let's do it, because it's so weird. Because we haven't done that, I think, since our first show where we predicted wins. Because it was always just like, well, where do you think we're going to wind up? Now I think we can do all the above. We can do...
It's a lot easier math when there's only 60 games,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, right. So, please.
So, I think... Acuna and Freeman alone are going to lead a juggernaut offense.
Juggernaut, all right.
And you're going to have one of those random guys you mentioned, the Dansby and Austin Riley, step up. A Darno. And I think we're going to end up with, like I said, I think we're going to end up with four solid starting pitchers, and the bullpen's just going to be elite. And I think we get 39 wins.
Oh, wow.
Win that, at least.
Okay.
I won't go farther than that. And I'll knock on wood. But I think 39 wins will win that, at least.
I have a notch under there. I think we'll be marred by some inconsistency. And I think we'll be, like, in the 33 to 35 win range. That's sort of my ceiling. And we'll... potentially be in the running for a wild card spot. Because I think with the good news about our division is how pretty evenly matched it is between Philly, Nationals, us. I put the Mets below those three teams. But the good news is that we've beaten up on each other so much, and the AL East is tough, that, you know, you won't have a clear one runaway team, I don't think. Whereas, you know, something, a division like the NL West, you know, it's Dodgers all day. They're going to kill everybody. I think the Rockies suck, the Giants suck, Padres pretty much suck.
Okay.
They're probably not going to do anything. They're not a threat. Diamondbacks will probably suck again, too.
Oh, they got Bumgarner.
Yeah, they got a corpse of Bumgarner. Great. But you know what I'm saying? It's just like, if you compare the NL West to the NL East, or the AL West, for example, where the Astros are just going to fucking dominate. You know, you could look at potentially an Astros team that wins 46, 47 games, whereas the NL East winner is probably going to win 10 less than that because of how evenly matched the division is.
Sure.
So what I'm trying to get at is that even if you don't win the division, you have a good chance for a wild card if you stay competitive, because there's going to be a lot of teams that get buried fast who will not win the division. So I think... that the wild card will definitely, at least one wild card will come out of the NL East because of how evenly matched up the division is.
Well, I have the opposite take there and logic for beating yourselves up, that you're going to get too many losses to have a wild card team come out of the East.
But because it's even, I don't think a team's going to run away with it. I think those three teams will probably be within four or five games.
You can have like a Padres team that loses to the Dodgers, but it's good enough to beat up on the other shitty teams in the AL West.
It's possible. I mean, every...
How many wild cards we got this year? Is it...
I think it's just two again.
It's the old...
Yeah.
Same format?
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, it could go that way as well. But I feel good about the possibility of... that's a good point, actually, with Padres, you know, who are probably better than those other three teams in the NL West. They could go on around. Who the hell knows? It's almost ridiculous to try and make any predictions. But my ceiling is a wild card spot. And a devastating loss in the wild card game via some unpredictable bullshit like the 10-0 thing that happened last year, or just Brooks Conrad, or something in of that.
Back Brooks Conrad?
Well, no, I'm just saying something of that ilk of like Folty giving up 10 runs, Brooks Conrad missing that ball through his legs, Chipper Jones overshooting Dan Uggla on that double play in the wild card game in 2012. The list goes on. I can sit here all day and talk about this shit.
Yeah, no, please don't.
Levon Hernandez getting a call 25 feet outside on the outside corner in the NLCS 97. That's where I'm at right now. I think wild card's the ceiling and a brutal loss in the wild card game that destroys a brilliant Mike Soroka performance somehow.
Well, it's a bummer, but...
You could see it happen.
I'd expect
that. Yeah, expect nothing less. Yeah. I got nothing else really on the Braves, Adam. Could do some over-unders or something, but, you know, that'd probably be arbitrary and stupid.
I don't know why, Grant, but I agree with you.
Yeah.
It'd be a terrible segment.
Yeah, especially with, like, no preparation on it.
Yeah. I think that pretty much covered everything I wanted to. First game, 4 o'clock. We're still doing our backyard tailgate.
Yep.
Got some great hot dog buns, thanks to intern Jared, that he brought me from Maine. Little known fact, they got the best hot dog buns, the state of Maine. Snuck them down here as contraband, so shout out to intern Jared.
Is he your intern again? I can never keep track of it.
I think he's our
current. Okay.
Yeah, he's our lifelong intern.
Yeah, that's fair.
He's been the best we've had.
Even if we fire him, he's still hired at the end of the day.
He's got some good hot takes every now and then.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's it for the Braves. Should we do our,
begrudging United talk?
I think we can keep it to less than 2 minutes.
Full transparency, I did not watch a second of the game last night, so this is all you, though.
Got it. Yeah, I only watched the first half. They looked just as shitty as they've looked the other two games. They've now gone 360 straight minutes without scoring.
They were shut out again, right? 1-0?
Yeah, back-to-back-to-back shutouts. The first time as a franchise they've ever lost 3 games in a row. So after losing to
Cincinnati, yeah,
which was one of the worst teams in the league, they also lose to Columbus, one of the best teams in the league right now. They showed a little fight the second half, but it doesn't matter at that point. Get shut out again, shell themselves without Joseph Martinez. They have the Mike Fultonewicz of soccer players, Martinez.
So why would you say that Pity is the faulty of?
Oh, because he's got United. So much potential. Like he'll show like.
But what does he do on the field?
He'll have stretches of brilliance, and then just disappear. And it's just the shitty body language.
Oh, so he's a head case too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, disappearing when you need him.
Yeah, it's just like, I don't know.
That's my ill-informed soccer diagnosis.
I think that's pretty goddamn accurate, son.
Thanks, man.
It is interesting. I mean, I remember watching the Cincinnati game and just being like, obviously we know nothing about soccer. Not that we know a lot about baseball, but we play baseball. We've watched thousands of baseball games. We can at least talk about it enough that someone would care to listen to us. Soccer, all bets are off.
We're probably still in like the top 50 percentile of soccer knowledge in the U.S. at least. We know like 7 soccer players.
That's true.
And we know.
I guess it depends on what
we,
your.
We know a soccer game is called a soccer match.
I guess it depends on your
forward,
definition of soccer
striker,
knowledge. Strikers will over my pay grade.
Wings.
Don't know that either.
Spacing.
Never heard of that.
4-4-3.
I still don't understand offsides. So I think maybe you're there. I know nothing.
Okay, I'm top 50%.
You're top 50. I'm like in the 10%. Or the other 90%, I should say.
You're in remedial soccer.
Beyond remedial. Yeah. To call me remedial is being kind to remedial folks everywhere.
Intro to soccer.
But what I was trying to say is that it's amazing to me watching them mount Joseph Martinez, how it just feels like the life has been ripped out of this team. There's none of the exciting Atlanta United that we're used to know. This is like when Frank DeBoer started, but multiplied in terms of how bad it is watching this team. there is just nothing going on, at least in the second half of last year, or even maybe a little earlier. But after that initial period of struggle with DeBoer and trying to, you know, feel like each other from DeBoer's standpoint and from the player's standpoint, it felt like they started to gel. Yeah. Now there's no gelling going on. It is dry down there.
Well, you also
there's
gotta,
no moisture.
You also got to wonder how much this club needed that home field advantage. Because they're different.
They thrive off that.
They're a different team at the Benz with their supporters.
Yeah, they are always a better home team than a road team.
They've done all those, Copa, what was that thing they tried to call a championship where they won like three games and they're calling it a
game? Oh, sure. CONCACAF.
CONCACAF. But like anytime they'd go down to Mexico, they would suck.
Right.
Like they need the Benz and their rowdy supporters, and they don't have them. The people on the screens zooming. Have you seen that? At these Orlando matches, they have like on like the big screen, which isn't that big of a screen in the first place. They've got like the fans from both clubs zooming in and cheering, so you just see like the people's like faces wearing their Atlanta United scarves. That's not enough support for them. Graham looks disgusted.
I mean, that's just so stupid.
So
I mean, it would just make me more depressed as a player. Maybe they need to stop that. Maybe we'll win some fucking games or matches. Yeah. If it's just a dumb idea.
They don't have to worry about it anymore. They are not in Orlando. They are outside of the bubble now.
Oh, good. So
I don't know when they'll play again. It's gonna be a while, probably.
Man.
So
they're out of the tournament.
Yep.
Okay, officially.
Yep, they are eliminated.
Well, true to Atlanta. That was like not true to Atlanta though. To me, it's like even though they lost the last two games, 1-0, it felt like they were down 4 or 5-0 the whole time. I didn't see the last one, but the Cincinnati one. It's just pathetic. So, yeah. I mean,
they got no gusto.
No, they got no mojo right now. So maybe this is the best thing that can happen to them. I believe there's still a decent amount of season left to be played. So hopefully they can get their shit together. And there's enough talent on this team, I think, that you still got Guzan, who's a great goaltender, Barco, and some other. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say I know all the fucking players, but I think there's still enough on this team I've seen from years past that they can hopefully get their shit together. And they've gone through periods like this with DeBoer. I don't think it's the end of the world and it's time to like freak out about it if you're really hardcore in Atlanta United. But it certainly isn't a welcome return so far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good point.
But it's also not the end of the fucking world, I don't think.
No.
But, you know, if you go through another like 3 or 4 game stretch where it's like this, I think you sound the panic alarm.
You would have liked to see them advance. I had a feeling that Cincy game, the 9 a.m. start, like, that's just weird.
That's got to throw you off.
It's hot in Orlando, but maybe Orlando was the best place to do it. But
yeah.
They were open for business, Bo, so I guess that's where you take it.
Right. I think the Falcons released their offensive all-decade team.
Oh, yeah?
Can you look it up and I can guess it again like last week?
Yeah, let's go through that. So last week we did the Graham guesses the all-decade defensive team, and I think you might have missed one.
I did pretty well. I didn't get Alford. I think that was the one I missed.
Yeah, which, I mean, who would have ever thought he's a great Falcon?
Right.
So now we got the offense, which I think will be a little more intriguing. Possibly easier. We'll see. Graham, the all-decade team quarterback. This is from 2010 to 2020.
This is tough. I mean, you got a guy like Matt Schaub and got a guy like Spleen. But I think you got to go with Matt Ryan.
No Kurt Benkert or whatever his name is?
Well, I mean, I know everyone said he was the best quarterback ever before he broke his toe last year, but, you know, he didn't even play in a regular season game.
Was DJ Shockley? That's way back.
That was the last decade.
Yeah.
I mean, not this decade, but the last. That was like 2009 or something.
Okay, so who did you say, Graham?
I said Matt Ryan.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, great.
Running back.
Got to be Devontae. I don't think there's any question about that.
Oh, you are wrong, sir.
If it's Michael Turner, I'm going to jump out of the window.
It's Michael Turner.
I think that's ridiculous.
2010 and 2012.
I mean, it's 2012. He was a shell of himself. 2011, he was still okay. 2010, he was still good.
Finished third in rushing yards in both 2010 and 2011 seasons.
Yeah, he was still really good those years. But I think Devontae was, like, as good, if not better, and a better receiving back than Turner was. When.
For how many years, though?
For, like, four or five years. Four-ish years.
During his during Turner's three seasons with the Falcons this decade, Turner gained a combined 3,500 yards, rushing yards, and scored 33 touchdowns. Rushing touchdowns.
He did score a lot of touchdowns. I would still put Devontae over Turner this decade. From what, you know, obviously the last couple of years were a bust, but before that, I mean, everything before he signed his contract, I mean, he kicked ass. He was a big reason we got to the Super Bowl. More in the playoffs.
Can you keep him on because he's the reason we lost the Super Bowl?
It wasn't just him. There's
running his mouth about his contract the week of the Super Bowl.
There's
and then missing a block.
There's a number of
we don't need to get into
number of folks you can point to for that loss.
Devontae's on my shit list.
Fair enough. But I would have put Devontae over Michael Turner.
Fullback.
Oh. The white guy. I should know it's very specific for a fullback. God damn it, what's his name? He was also on the Super Bowl team. When you say his name, I'm going to punch myself in the face.
Yep. I can give you a clue.
I know his name. I just can't think of it right now. It's so hot out here in the outside world. God damn it. I see him in my head. Like, if he walked down the street, I'd be like, you're the guy. You're the Falcons fullback from the Super Bowl team. He's on the Bills now.
Yep, that was going to be my clue. So
and I just can't think of his fucking name.
There's a golfer from the early 2000s that has the same last name. He was a lefty and went toe-to-toe with either Tiger or Phil, and he ultimately won.
Oh, Patrick DeMarco.
Yeah. You remember Chris DeMarco, the golfer?
No, that didn't help me at all. Oh, I think I was just thinking about it more. Yeah, Patrick DeMarco is going to be your fullback pick.
Yeah, Chris DeMarco was a lefty golfer from the early 2000s, went to University of Florida.
It just gave me more time to think about it.
Got it.
And for some reason, I was like, oh, Patrick DeMarco.
Glad we got that out there.
I knew it was some weird thing like a Mick or a D or something like DeMarco, Mick Elroy, some bullshit like that.
Oh, was Ovi Muhele this decade?
He, I think for one year.
Early.
I think for 1 year.
Yeah.
But he was a great fullback for sure.
Yeah. All right. Two wide receivers. This should be pretty easy.
Roddy and Julio.
Yep.
Very good.
Moving on. Tight end.
This has got to be Tony.
Tony?
Yeah.
2010 to 2013.
Yeah. And he started in 2009. He kicked ass the whole time he was here, pretty much.
Yeah. Pro Bowler in each of his four seasons with the Falcons.
Yeah.
29 touchdowns.
Yeah, he's a monster.
Center.
Got to be Mac.
Yep. All right, this is where it gets weird.
Yeah, with the offensive line.
Two guards.
Definitely Chris Truster. I'm just kidding. God, I don't know. We haven't had great guard play. So please tell me.
Andy LaRitre.
He was solid.
And Justin Blaylock.
Oh, Blaylock, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, he was solid, man.
Yeah, Blaylock was, I think, above average. He's very good.
Two tackles.
Jake Matthews.
Yep.
Oh, who was the other guy that was okay? Person?
No.
I don't know.
2010 to 2012.
Oh, that early. It's not your boy Peter Kunz.
No. Why are you naming all the... you can only remember the shitty people.
I really... Yeah, that's it. 2010, 2012.
Tyson Klebo.
Oh, Klebo. I forget that he was there. Like, him and Blaylock and Dahl were fucking nasty-ass blockers, man. Yeah, that's dude. When we had a physically brutal offensive line.
Yeah, they were dirty back then.
Yeah.
That's what we need. Okay, this flex will make you feel better about yourself. Flex position.
It's not Devontae.
It's Devontae.
It is Devontae, okay.
Yeah. And they also said... He was named the flex player for the Falcons this decade after Turner barely edged him out in a tight voting battle at running back.
Oh, is this based off of votes?
Yeah.
Okay.
How else do you think they'd come up
with this? I thought it was just some silly-ass committee sitting around thinking about, oh, I'm the best Falcons all decade team.
Yeah, it's a committee of journalists.
Well, I thought you said vote. I thought it was a fan vote.
I don't think so.
So I was right. It was just a bunch of journalists sitting around.
Yeah, it's, okay. It's nonsense.
Yeah. I mean, that's okay. that's probably... It's not... There's not much I would just... I don't think I disagree with any of those picks, actually.
Yeah.
All right, I think that wraps up today's show. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And we hope you're doing well out there. We'll see you again next week after baseball starts. Baseball starts on Friday at 4 o'clock with the Braves taking on the Mets in New York.
Soroka DeGrom, it's official.
Soroka versus DeGrom. Should be a hell of a pitching matchup, hell of a game. Good way to take your mind off all the bullshit that's happening in the world. Until next time, rise up. Stand brotherhood, unite and conquer. Believe in Blue Land. And remain true to Atlanta. Hospitometer.
Hospitometer.
Guess who just got back today? Them wild eyed boys that have been away. Now they're back and they're ready to play. And they're doing it all for the A. Seems like years since they were around. I've been wondering where they could be found. Now they're back in the A town. Driving all the other teams crazy. Braves are back in town. Braves are back in town. I said the Braves are back in town. Braves are back in town. The Braves are back in town. Braves are back in town. Braves are back in town.